text. Across the United States, approximately 100,000 black women and girls go missing each year, with more being reported every day. While black women represent only 7% of the country's population, they make up nearly 40% of all missing women. Their cases remain unsolved an average of 4 times longer than those involving white women. This is the story of two of those women, their families, and the decade-long battle to uncover the truth of what happened to them.
It's the same thing with Pam's case, but with Unique's case, I was totally oblivious.
Yeah, well, I mean, no book wrote on this. What do you do when your loved one goes missing and nobody's out there to help you? No book on that.
So we have to be the books.
Yeah.
We have to carry it forward.
A man and woman stand in the woods, littered with fallen leaves. Street signs at an intersection say, Oglethorpe and 4th. Light glows from a front stoop at night. Title: Left for Dead. Text: February 14, 2009, Washington, D.C., 77-year-old Thelma Butler has plans to spend Valentine's Day with her daughter, 47-year-old Pam Butler, and Pam's boyfriend, 43-year-old Jose Rodriguez Cruz. But Thelma never hears from her daughter, Derek Butler, Pamela Butler's brother.
Valentine's Day happened to fall on a Saturday, and Pam was very punctual. They had given my mother time that they were supposed to meet. My mother's at home, and she's dressed waiting for Pam and Jose to come by. Saturday came and went, and they never showed up.
A woman looks through curtains.
My mother called Pam to find out what was going on and didn't get an answer. My mother called me on Monday and said, Derek, me, Pam, and Jose were supposed to go out for Valentine's Day. She said, I haven't heard from Pam. Have you talked to her? I said, no, I haven't talked to her. I didn't think very much of it because Pam had just met Jose. It was their first Valentine's Day together. I said, well, they probably went out of town somewhere and decided they didn't want to be bothered with my mother. So I didn't do anything.
Text, February 17th, 2009.
That Tuesday, my mother called me again. I got off the phone with my mother. I immediately called Pam. Didn't get an answer back. My mother didn't take that too lightly. And she called my youngest sister, Donice, and Donnie's son, Brandon, and they rode up to Pam's house. They got up to Pam's house, and when they got there, they immediately called me and they said, Derek, you need to come up here. Something is wrong.
Photos show a porch.
I drove up to her house, and when I first walked in, I didn't see anything that looked out of place. They said, go take a look in the office. I went in the office, and I saw papers on the floor, or files on the floor. Pam was extremely organized. I mean, very organized. But if you knew Pam, you knew that something isn't right. I went to her bedroom, and the comforter on Pam's bed was gone. Her bed wasn't made up. That was another red flag.
Remotes lay on a bed.
We're trying to decide what to do. And I said, well, let's call the police. Call the police. And the police came. The first officer that came, he came in, and he looked around, and he said, you know, it doesn't look like anything is going on to me. And he says, you know, I don't think we really need to take a report. Just give it a little time. Well, I was angry about that. I wasn't happy with that at all.
Dirk had to call a friend of his that worked at the precinct and explain everything that was going on. In order to get the report made, the friend, the lieutenant, had to come to the home.
He came over to Pam's house. And when he got there, he said, we're going to take a report.
Mitch Credle, homicide detective, Metropolitan PD.
Once the police report was made, our mobile crime unit came to the house.
Floppy disks lay strewn on the floor.
They processed it to find signs of foul play.
A card sits in the trash.
Collect DNA, collect evidence. Technicians, they didn't discover any blood in the home. A piece of a plastic bag was recovered from the side window.
Chief Newsham.
There were a couple of details that came out of that investigation that were concerning. One of them was the way that the shade on the window was found. That isn't the way Pam would leave the shade.
A photo shows the windows.
The way Dirk described it, Pam usually have her blinds on the bottom half of the window, whereas the sunlight is just coming through the top part. But in this particular situation, the blinds were covering the top part of the window. This is not Pam, it's very unusual. But the family is showing and telling you there are signs of foul play. The norm of not being able to contact Pam is there. So that report should have been made instantly without any questions asked.
After they left, and I was sitting there, I was talking with my mother and my sister and my nephew. And I said, anybody have Jose's number? And my nephew said, yeah, I have it. I called him, I talked with him, and I told him I wanted to come over to his house and talk to him. My strategy was, at the time, I didn't know whether something was really going on, but I also knew my sister. And I know that if you do something to her, no matter who you are, she's going to fight. And he was light-skinned. So I said, when I get over there, I said, I'm looking for scratches or something on him. Pam spent her life in D.C., Upper Northwest, which was a very affluent area. Jose lived in Virginia, which was like a 25-minute ride from Pam's house to his house.
Traffic passes along the highway system.
Dirk went to Jose's place in Virginia. He wanted to know what went on. Jose explained that him and Pam broke up due to an argument they had, which involved him spending time with his daughter.
Jose says he goes to my sister's house on Friday to talk to her. And she tells him, I don't want to be bothered with you no more. He said, but I really didn't want to break up. I loved her. He said, I haven't heard from Pam since we broke up Friday.
Two men speak inside. One of them approaches a dresser.
I went to one of his dressers and I pulled the drawer out. And I was just trying to get a reaction out of him. And he never gave it to me. He said, man, I don't have anything to hide. And then I said, I'm going to ask you to do something. I said, you're not really in a position to tell me no. I said, I need you to take your clothes off. Because I know if you did something to her, I said, she's going to fight. And he looked at me. So he took his clothes off. And when he took his clothes off, I didn't see any scratches or any cuts or anything on him.
The other man turns around, shirtless.
And while I'm there sitting there talking to him, my phone is constantly ringing. We talked a little bit longer. I finally was convinced that he had not done anything to Pam. So I get myself together and I walk out the house and I'm going back to my car. And I called my mother and she said, you need to see the surveillance system. So I go back to her house.
A hand lowers a cell phone.
One thing that was unique about Pam's place is the fact that there's cameras everywhere. The cameras on the front, cameras on the side where the garage is, the cameras in the rear.
There was one portion of the house that wasn't covered by video, and that was actually the same window where we had concern about the shade.
The family looked at the surveillance cameras and they saw Pam enter the home on February the 12th. And they never saw her leave back out.
Jose enters.
On February the 14th, you can see Jose arriving. And then you also can see on February 14th, him leaving carrying a large bag.
He had a shopping bag in his hand. Now, the shopping bag wasn't big enough to have a body or anything in. But it just looked odd. And it shows him walking in and out of the house on Friday and Saturday and Sunday. And I said, now, he didn't tell me anything about any of this. He told me he hadn't heard from Pam or seen Pam since Friday.
Jose walks in a security cam image.
After seeing all that, I'm getting angry. And I'm figuring, you know, I thought I was pretty shocked. This guy done played me. So call the police and tell them about the surveillance system.
They provided the police with this footage of what was going on.
after seeing parts of the surveillance system, I started telling my mother and my sister and everybody, I said, you know, Pam is not alive anymore. Pam is dead.
A photo of Pam fades away. Text. February 18, 2009. Books lay scattered on a sofa.
Members of the Metropolitan Police Department, after obtaining a search warrant for Jose's residence in Virginia, they went to his residence to conduct the interview. And Jose told the police the same thing he told Dirk, that they broke up on the 13th, and that was it. He left, he got his items, and he never returned. Jose was asked about the bag he was carrying from law enforcement. He explained how he was just coming to return some things and to take his personal things out of there.
Jose carries a bag through a courtyard in surveillance images.
The police were doing the investigation, and I'm constantly calling them. Police said, you know, he's cooperating. He's doing everything that we want him to do. But in the interim of that happening, my mother said to me, she said, Derek, why isn't this on the news?
Keeping it alive in the media is really important to help. Help these cases.
The 43-year-old ex-boyfriend didn't want us to show his face on TV, nor did he want us to reveal his name. He says he didn't hurt Pamela Butler and doesn't know where she is.
Jennifer Donnellan was the first one to cover the story. I was just so grateful to her because of the way she handled the story and the way she handled us.
If you ask me what's the biggest wish right now is that Pam would appear safe and sound.
They did all that they could do, but it just wasn't enough for me when you're talking about your sister missing.
Detectives are still working very hard in this case. If you have any information, please call Metropolitan Police.
Mitch Kredel, homicide detective, Metropolitan PD, retired.
Dirk was the brother that you would want everyone to have. Even though the police were involved in the investigation, Dirk was basically doing his own investigation. He took things in his own hands.
I constantly walked her community where she lived, and Pam actually lived like 45 minutes to an hour from where I lived. But I would go up there and knock on the neighbors' doors. I was even calling Pam friends and saying, did Pam tell you something? Do you know something that was going on that might help me? Nobody knew anything.
Derek Butler, Pamela Butler's brother.
I don't think Pam had been missing for more than 2 or 3 days. And this organization called Black and Missing actually speak to me. I never heard of it. Her name is Derica Wilson, and it is two sister-in-laws. The other one's name is Natalie Wilson.
The Black and Missing Foundation is a nonprofit organization that brings awareness to missing people of color.
When we started the organization nearly 12 years ago, 30% of missing persons were persons of color, and now that number has increased to 40%.
Derica is former law enforcement, and Natalie is in public relations. So those are two areas where Black and brown people are not represented well. And so they form together to make Black and Missing. They're just that extra resource that a family member can go to.
Dickerson.
They were very instrumental in helping me. They would even tell me sometime, they say, Derek, we ain't heard nothing about Pam. You need to go back to the news and see if you can get, you know, stir this thing up again.
Text. At the advice of Black and Missing, Derek reaches out to media outlets to discuss Pam's disappearance. Peter Newsham, Chief of Police, Prince William County, Virginia.
Derek wasn't going to let this thing come out of the news. You know, he wanted to get to the bottom of it. So he developed relationships with the reporters to continue to draw attention to this case.
Derek's story and the story of his sister is not unlike many other Black and Missing stories. You just don't get the coverage.
Gamini.
It's just totally different when it's just an adult African-American, because I would get an impression that people think that we're just going to return. You know, but being African-American, I know how the family structure is set up in African-American families. We are family oriented. We're not missing. We're not going anywhere. We love our families.
Photos of Pam and other family members cover a wall.
Pam was 2 years older than myself. I had four sisters growing up. I was the only boy. Me and Pam were closer than most of the other ones because our age was so close. We grew up in Southwest Washington, D.C., which was a middle-class community at the time, but it was really crime-ridden. As we got older, my sisters and myself, we moved out and we moved to other places.
Just found some pictures of Pam that I thought you might want to take a look at.
Mm-hmm. That's the one.
That's actually one at her house there.
Yes, in her house.
Pam was the one in the family that really kept us together. Whenever there was a birthday for somebody or Thanksgiving, Christmas, Pam would make sure that we got together for those. She was the glue for the family.
Well, she would take me shopping. On Saturdays was our weekend to go shopping. She never let me want for anything either. She was beautiful, too.
Pam's mom looks up.
We talked. Sometimes we talked every day. Uh-huh. I like this one, too. And this is one when she was on... She was on a trip.
Mm-hmm. This is when she was in Jamaica again. Pam was really a go-getter. She encouraged all of us to do better, to kind of look up as opposed to where we came from. Pam was the first one in my immediate family to go to college. Pam graduated from American University. She got her bachelor's degree from there. Then she went back and got her master's degree. Pam was a computer analyst for EPA, and she actually was very good at computers. That was what she enjoyed doing, and she spent her whole life working for different parts of the government.
That's right in front of EPA, isn't it?
Is this EPA?
Yeah. This is the building that she was working in when she went missing.
She was actually a supervisor there, and she managed a couple of people. Even though Pam was extremely successful, she wanted to find somebody that she could spend her life with. She wanted to get married, and she hadn't been successful in finding somebody that she was extremely happy with.
Jose looks down.
Pam met a guy by the name of Jose Cruz Rodriguez. She met him in September 2008.
Pam and Jose met on a dating app. Jose worked at a medical clinic and also former military officer.
He seemed like an extremely nice guy. If I had to pick somebody for her, I would have picked him. They dated from September to February. And in February 2009 was when Pam disappeared.
Text. With the help of the Black and Missing Project, Pam's family posts flyers about her disappearance. But 9 weeks into the search, they are no closer to finding her. Derek holds a missing poster.
It's right here.
Yes, because you only should be missing.
The first flyer that they put out.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking, you know, this is going to be an open and shut case. I mean, it's going to be solved in a week or two. The police were in Pam's house for 3 months. And in those 3 months, they didn't find anything.
Jose was able to be seen on surveillance cameras.
When you're looking at the video, he would be coming in and out of her house. I immediately knew that he had did something. But while I was investigating, the police had their eyes on someone else.
Flags wave outside the precinct.
In any investigation, anybody can be a suspect. So you really have to keep your eyes wide open. And one of the tips that we received suggested that Derek may have been somehow involved.
5 months into the case, the police told me that I was a suspect in my sister's disappearance. And they're saying, you know, we're not looking at Jose anymore. We're looking at you. I said, looking at me? What are you looking at me for? They said she left everything that she had to you in her will. Jose had nothing to gain from killing your sister. You had everything to gain.
The detective, in any case, you're going to follow the money. And that led to Derek.
Pam and Derek smiled together in a photo.
Pam said, Derek, we need to buy some houses together. She said, anybody that becomes rich have property. Okay, so we start buying houses together. And then this apartment building comes along worth $1.2 million. So we bought the apartment building. we started talking and we said, well, if something happens to one of us, we need to know what to do. She said, we'll get wheels. And with the wheel, if something happens to me, I'll leave everything that I have to you. And if something happens to you, you leave everything that you have to me. She really wanted to see some upward mobility in our family.
The detectives, they looked at bank records, phone records. It's just something you have to follow up on when the information come in.
That was probably one of the hardest times of my life. Here I am, I'm grieving. I'm doing the best I can to try to find out what happened to my sister. And then all of a sudden you get hit and they tell you that you are a suspect. It took me to a really dark place.
Derek sits with his mom.
A lot of time, I just felt there was so much stress on him. He was here every day. He would check on me every day. He was going back and forth to the police department. And later on, I didn't find out that they were coming to him in wee hours of the night trying to get him to confess.
Gamini.
He was having trouble sleeping. I mean, you can just imagine the weight of having to not only pursue what happened to your sister, but being a suspect as well.
For a long time, I was under investigation. I think a lot of it was to try to get me off of their back or to get me off the news, thinking that that would quiet me.
The detectives did a great job trying to connect Dirk to the incident, but they didn't find anything. Dirk became frustrated with the investigation. He can feel it in his gut that foul play is involved and he's not getting the response from the police department that he would expect.
Derek pores over papers.
I'm raising so much hell about the case and you all are not doing anything, you know, about what happened to my sister. This is not going to be one of those cases where a black girl goes missing and y'all do nothing about it.
He holds a printed surveillance image. Text. February 12, 2010, 1 year since Pam's disappearance. Detective Kredel, Metropolitan PD.
A year later, 2010, still there's no information and the case was still at a standstill.
Hope starts to dwindle.
Derek Butler.
Black and Missing called me. They said, you know, you need to do another prayer vigil to keep this story in the news. I'm still saying to myself, I'm going to fight it to the end. And that was something that me and Pam had talked about. I always watched crime shows, and she watched them also. She said, Dirk, if something ever happens to me, promise me that you won't ever stop looking. And I said, I want to do that. Never thinking that that would be my story, my life. But it was.
Text. While Derek and his family are fighting to give Pam's case attention, across town, another tragedy is unfolding. The sun lightens over D.C. Text. October 10, 2010, Southeast Washington, D.C. Tiffany Smith, Unique Harris's cousin.
It was in October of 2010. My daughter's birthday weekend was coming up. And Unique had called me and said that she wanted to have a family sleepover with the kids. I spoke to Talia about it. She said, yes, Mom, I want to go.
Assistant Chief of Police Chanel Dickerson.
Unique Harris was a 24-year-old single mother with two young boys. She had recently moved to D.C. from Richmond, Virginia. That evening, Unique with her two young sons, Yuandre and Richard, and her cousin's daughters were having an evening with popcorn, movies. They were having a good time until Unique put them to bed.
Two young boys stand up from a sofa. A housing complex sign says, Garfield Hills, a POA community.
The next morning is when, for lack of a better word, all hell broke loose.
Concrete steps lead up to a building entrance.
It was about 8:45 or so in the morning. I had received a call from my daughter, Talia. She said, Mom, Unique is not here. I said, okay, well, maybe she went to the corner store to get you guys some breakfast. So don't worry. She should be right back. Call me back in about 15, 20 minutes or so if nothing changes. About 15, 20 minutes later, my daughter calls me back. Mom, Unique is still not here.
Tiffany rushed right over and then called Valencia to tell Valencia that Unique was not in the apartment.
I get a call from Tiffany. She asked me, had I talked to Unique? Did Unique say anything about, you know, she was going to leave or, you know, anything like that? I'm like, no. What do you mean? I mean, it's just not registering to me. So I'm in disbelief. I'm in shock. I just went there.
At that point, Valencia and Richard, Unique's granddad, showed up. I was sitting on one of the other couches, still trying to make phone calls, still trying to get Unique on the phone.
Me and my dad dropped my grandsons to my mother's house to kind of like tuck them away until we could try to figure some of this whole thing out.
Valencia let everyone know in the family what was going on, asking the boys, was anybody there? You know, all they remember is when they went to sleep.
Pamela Harris Alexander, Unique Harris's cousin.
Me and my father went back over to Unique's apartment. As soon as I got to the top of those stairs and proceeded to go through the threshold of her door, it's like an icicle went clean down my spine.
She looked around and noticed that Unique's glasses were in the apartment. Her purse was in the apartment, but she couldn't find her cell phone.
Unique went nowhere without her glasses. She could not see without her glasses. And for those to still be there, that's when my heart sank.
Toys sit on the ground.
That was like when an overwhelming, fearful anger started to creep in on me. Because I know my child and this ain't my child. Oh, hell no. Somebody done something. We have to call the police.
The exterior of the station curves.
Officers from the 7th District responded to take the missing person report. Some of the things that the officers found when they arrived at Unique's apartment, that there was no sign of a struggle. There was no blood. But there was a missing part of the cushion of her sofa, about the size of a grapefruit.
It wasn't just the top surface material, it was kind of dug out into the cushion. So, of course, that stood out.
Ashley.
The police were asking specific questions like, has she ever done this before? And does she have a new boyfriend? Where are the children's father at? If, you know, she took off, where do you think she would go? I knew she didn't just walk off and just leave her children, first of all, and me in that situation, because she's always been there for all of us.
A baby wears a white outfit in a photo.
Unique was born on January 31st of 1986 during the blizzard. She was, for lack of a better word, angelic from day one. Always a sweet, loving, respectful, honorable child.
Valencia blinks and looks up.
I don't think I could have had a better first child.
Her and her mom had a good relationship. It was like sisters.
Melissa Mathis.
Valencia always just wanted the best for Unique. And no matter what went on, Unique knew her mother had her back.
All of us were just so excited for her to see her just blossom into this bubbly, just beautiful young woman.
Valencia looks at photos.
That was her high school graduation. Her and my dad, her papa. She got her diploma in 2004. After high school, she met my grandson's father. And from that came my grandsons.
Valencia turns over a photo.
This is the first pair of shoes she bought her son, Richard. His first pair of Stride-Rite shoes.
She smiles.
Unique provided for her kids, made sure instant that her kids knew their ABCs, 1, 2, 3. She was hands-on. And not only with her own children, my daughter, her other cousins, she was just a hands-on type of mom.
I just looked at the look on his face when his mother was around.
Valencia turns over a photo with a blurred boy's face. Text. After her and her partner split up, Unique and her boys lived in Richmond, Virginia. But in 2010, Unique moved back to D.C. to take care of her mother. A woman enters a front door.
I broke my leg September the 19th of 2010. She moved back to D.C. area and stayed with me originally.
Her mother injured her leg, and Unique cared for her mother during that time, and she had aspirations to go back to school to become a massage therapist.
Melissa.
Unique wanted to have her own place, and she wanted to make sure that her kids had their room, their space, and she didn't want to be a burden to her mother. She moved out. She picked this apartment. It's an area that we really didn't want her to move in. However, it gave her her independence.
She would come to my house every morning on her way, taking my grandsons to school to make sure that I had food, to make sure that, you know, if I needed any help, she would wash my dishes if I had dishes in the sink or whatever she could do. And she not only took care of herself and her sons, but she took care of everybody she loved.
She had lived in her apartment about 5 weeks before she disappeared in October of 2010.
Chanel Dickerson, Assistant Chief of Police.
When investigating a missing persons case, there are so many things you have to think about. Did she leave home on her own? Was she abducted, you know, in the neighborhood? Or did she just decide to leave her life? Like to say, I'm out of here. I'm not going to be here anymore.
Janice Harris.
It was disappearance. That's what the police said. They tried to make it seem like she just walked away, but we knew she didn't.
She wasn't somebody who had done this before. She had no issues prior. So why, when somebody tell you the first time somebody is missing, you don't take this seriously?
Glasses sit on a shelf. Valencia walks down the sidewalk, carrying missing posters and wearing a shirt with Unique's photo. Elaine Harris, Unique Harris's cousin.
After the 24 hours, we started putting up flyers and just trying to find her to bring her home to her two sons and her family. We wanted to find her. We wasn't going to stop.
Tiffany.
We walked the streets. Valencia, Richard, the family, me, Talia, we all walked the entire complex. We went door to door, knocking on doors, asking if anyone seen anything, if they knew anything, if they heard anything. We were looking in dumpsters.
We were asking people all around, have they seen her, heard from her? We walked through the woods. Yeah, we pretty much did everything we could think of at the time.
Ashley Jordan, Unique Harris's sister. Valencia Harris, Unique's mother.
7th District, when I first went there, they expressed to me that it was Columbus Day weekend, and they said that the missing persons department was closed. And the first thing that just kind of like just jumped out of my mouth was, well, people do get missing on the weekend and the holidays. They took the report, but it didn't start getting taken seriously for at least 48 hours. And I'm being generous when I say 48 hours.
Janice, cousin.
Because there were no evidence in the house that was some type of struggle or anything.
the detectives, I guess, put it together that it had to have been someone she knew.
The main theory was my theory, that my grandson's father may have had something to do with it because she was in a custody battle with him. They had an upcoming court date. The detectives, they made several trips down to Richmond to question him.
We were able to rule him out because he was out of town during the time of her disappearance.
Chanel Dickerson, Assistant Chief of Police, Metropolitan PD, retired. Text. Phone records reveal that on the night she disappeared, Unique had been on the phone with a man named Paris until approximately 3 a.m.
Unique had a boyfriend named Paris Craig. At first, Paris was a thought of mine, but I confronted him straight up, face to face. He was trying to be as helpful as he possibly could because he kept saying, I can't believe somebody took my girlfriend. Paris was absolutely nowhere near D.C. at the time when Unique was taken.
A man and woman hug in the entrance of an apartment building. Text. November 6, 2010, 4 weeks since Unique Harris disappeared. While driving with Unique's children, Unique's sister receives an unexpected tip.
We rode this main street named Good Hope Road every day, literally. And my oldest nephew, Richard, used to always point and say, Iceberg live right there. It became a habit. So after the third time of us riding that path, and we're like, who is Iceberg? We're not even knowing if this is like a person, really, you know, because they were only 4 and 5 years old.
So it turns out that Iceberg was a real person, but I didn't know anything about him. I didn't know anything about, you know, him and Unique knowing each other.
Iceberg is his nickname, and his real name is Isaac Moyer.
I still didn't even realize or know who this guy was. But at that point, I think the police was moving a little bit too slow for me. So I tracked him down to his mom. Better tell your son to contact me as soon as possible. Which he did.
He came to meet us in our living room in Southeast, and he was just like, yeah, he knew my sister. They were really good friends. He knew she had a boyfriend, so it was, you know, nothing like that.
He was saying that he wasn't there. He didn't know anything about it.
He was willing to cooperate with the police.
A woman speaks with a man in a living room. Signed text. Metropolitan Police Department.
Police interviewed Moy several times, and he admitted that he was friends with Unique. However, he denied being at her home.
Text. Police dismiss Isaac Moy as a suspect. An interrogation room lies empty. An investigator sits at a desk.
When investigating missing person cases, you get a lot of tips. And some tips came in for Unique's case as well. She was reported as being in Georgia, in Detroit, but all of those tips were checked out and they did not produce any results.
From under a table, file cubbies sit above the investigator's desk.
Unique's family felt like that the police department was not taking her disappearance seriously. It was being assigned to different investigators.
It was so frustrating to literally be telling the police department, this is not just a missing person. Like, she didn't just run away. No, something happened.
In the beginning, this case was just classified as a regular, non-critical missing person. And what that means on the police department is that she was not a juvenile under the age of 18, nor was she a senior citizen over the age of 65, nor did she possess like mental illness or suicidal or tendencies of, you know, like an issue of drug addiction that would have made it a critical incident.
My first thought was, what the hell is a non-critical person? There's no such thing as a non-critical missing person.
They had offered a $1,000 reward, which they retracted. They said it was a mistake. So I had to raise a couple of $1,000 and put my money on the table.
Melissa.
Valencia will be out half the night traveling, looking for anywhere for Unique around that area.
I was out there more times than I could tell you, 2 o'clock in the morning. You know, when you can't sleep at night and your child is gone, what do? You go looking.
Diane Grooms, Assistant Chief, Metropolitan PD, retired.
Back in October of 2010, I was the Assistant Chief of Patrol Services. And it's Valencia Harris, who reached out to me by phone and asked, you know, she's kind of frustrated. She believes her daughter is a critical missing person and needed more police attention.
As soon as Diane Grooms, a.k.a. Auntie DG, came into play, I knew from day one that she would do whatever she could to help me to find my daughter.
I felt some kind of deep connection to her because she was just this authentic, beautiful mother. And you could feel her pain, feel her passion, feel her anger. Not only was she the mother of Unique, but she was the grandmother of the babies that were left behind.
Unique poses with her sons.
That's what I do love about DC. There are so many grassroots organizations that do good work. And one of the organizations I was blessed to meet was Black and Missing. When I met Valencia, I'm like, I have the perfect people to introduce you to.
A missing poster offers a $1,000 reward. Text. Thanksgiving, 2010. It has been 7 weeks since Unique Harris went missing. Pam Butler has now been missing for almost 2 years. Derek Butler, Pamela Butler's brother.
In the interim of all this happening with my sister, Unique Harris goes missing, and she lives in Washington, D.C. I get a phone call from Black and Missing, and they said, would you like to be on the board of directors with us? I said, I would love to. I started working with Valencia Harris. We became really good friends.
In the beginning, we just looking for wherever we can get the help at.
Do you remember when they first hooked us up?
Yes, I do. And we done been through so much.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It almost seems like, you know, time was standing still and moving forward at the same time. As crazy as that sounds, but you look back over. And then, you know, because Black and Missing Foundation was one of the first that even put a video out. And they also helped me to learn that I needed to pivot outside of D.C.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, it happens here, but they let me know my baby could have been anywhere.
Valencia stands with Derek in a forest.
I'm thinking about back in the beginning when Black and Missing Foundation was actively in it. For example, when Derica said, Valencia, you got to take your sunglasses off.
Yeah.
I was like, no, I don't want people to see the pain in my eyes, right? She was like, but that's what we want them to see. That's what they have to see.
Yeah.
They can't connect and identify with you if they don't see that. And it never dawned on me.
Valencia, Unique's mother.
Derek. Miss Thelma Butler and their family, they embraced me and Unique and our family with open arms. The Butler family are sayers and doers. Remember the first year, you know, I came to y'all barbecue with the family and, you know, everybody was just so loving and you just don't find that nowadays. So I am definitely forever grateful. It's like, you know, we family. You my brother from another mother.
We would talk about the case. We would strategize sometimes. And every time she had a prayer vigil, I was always there. I would walk the neighborhood. I would pass out flyers. I just felt compelled to help. And try to bring some resolution to what they were going through.
They helped me to understand that this is something that we can fight. We don't have to just lay down and take this.
The Washington Monument stands toward the right on the D.C. skyline. The Capitol sits against a dim sky.
That first year was when it was like I was just pushing on pure anger, frustration, adrenaline, determination. That's when my mama bear claws had to come out. Now, I gotta make my daughter national and international by myself.
Valencia wears a shirt with Unique's photo on the news.
Valencia Harris's 25-year-old daughter, Unique, has been missing since October 2010. It's a case that's baffled police.
I had a Facebook page when all this happened, but I had to transform myself into being knowledgeable enough to use it to Unique's case advantage. We really started to get traction. People were engaging and sharing Unique's flyer all over the world.
Tiffany Smith.
Unique's and Pamela Butler's cases were similar, both women of color, both in the Washington, D.C. area, but both did not meet the police criteria of a serious situation.
It's abundantly clear that the cases were not taken seriously. Even with Pamela Butler's case and Unique Harris' case, it should have been flooded all throughout the police department. As a Black woman, it didn't feel like to me that the system cared.
You have two young Black queens from Washington, D.C., who their cases are different, but they're similar. Why are they similar? Because they're Black, because it's not getting the coverage that it should. Pamela Butler and Unique Harris, it didn't matter.
Thelma holds a flyer of Pam. Another woman holds a flyer of Unique. Text. February 2013. It's been 4 years since Pam Butler went missing and nearly three since Unique Harris disappeared.
Throughout the investigation of Pam being missing, I went through several different detectives. Some of the detectives actually asked to get off the case because I was such a pain. Mitch Cradle comes along, he gets on the case.
I began to feel as though they put me on the case because I was Black. They put me on the case because Dirk was raising hell.
Mitch Cradle.
They know I can get along with everyone. And me and Dirk developed a relationship. I'm in the sexual assault unit. I'm investigating 20 to 25, sometimes 30 cases a month. I had a sergeant who was constantly pushing and pressing me to investigate my sexual assaults. I'm honest with Dirk about everything. I don't cut no corners. I tell him the absolute truth about what's going on. If Pam was white, I'm being honest with you, that would have been the only case I would have been working on. What time I did have to spend on the case, I spent on the case. No information is being developed, and not much can be done at this particular point because it wasn't even classified as an offense yet. It's still an incident because it was still listed as an incident. That kept the case at a standstill. And that changes the culture and the temperature, the outlook, everything on how things are handled.
I mean, it's years that has gone by. I started questioning whether they're ever going to solve the case. Is this thing ever going to be solved?
An investigator hangs up a phone. Text. 2016, Unique Harris has been missing for nearly 6 years. Pam Butler has been missing for seven. A sign stands outside the police headquarters. Derek Butler, Pamela Butler's brother.
I called the chief of police. He said, you know, we're doing the best we can. It's just a hard case to solve. But when 7 years go by, he said, I can do some different things with the case because in 7 years, we can actually declare your sister dead. And it gives us some different tools that we can work with.
Pam's photo sits on a plaque.
So I had a celebration of life for my sister Pam at Lane Memorial CME Church.
A woman sings.
I wanted to let the police know that I wasn't going to stop. And I was trying to put the spotlight on them to do something. I announced that I was having the celebration of life for Pam. All the media showed up, family showed up, and the chief of police was actually there.
You know, we're not going to give up on this case. You know, we really kind of need a little bit more evidence.
Pamela brought life into the world.
Pamela Butler would have been 55 now. The family's hoping someone's conscience will help solve the case.
Mitch Kredel, homicide detective, Metropolitan PD.
7 years later, there is no body. There's no additional evidence. So that's when Mike Fulton took over the case.
He gets the case, everything that suggested that she was no longer alive. He petitions the court. He gets a presumption of death certificate from the court that becomes technically classified as a homicide.
When Mike Fulton took over the case in the summer of 2016, like any detective, he started from the beginning. And that gave the case fresh eyes.
Chief Newsham.
He meticulously goes through all of the evidence in the case, and in particular, he goes through the video evidence showing both Pam and Rodriguez Cruz going in and out of the house prior to her going missing. I mean, he must have spent so many hours looking at that video.
Detective Fulton watched the video in real time, and he saw things that the other detectives didn't see.
An investor watches the surveillance footage of Pam's house.
The detective noticed that when Rodriguez Cruz would go into the house, he would use what appeared to be a single key to get in. The last time that Pam was seen going into the house, she was seen using the dangling keychain, and she was never seen coming out again. And then the next time he sees Rodriguez Cruz going in and out of the house, he's got Pam's dangling keychain, which she had never used before.
When I saw all the photographs, all the footage of everything that was going on, first thing that came to my mind is she was taken out that window. On the side of the house where there is a street, there is no cameras.
He saw all the lights go off in Pam's house. Everything went dark. They assumed that he killed her and put her out the window. But the surveillance system wouldn't pick that up. Then he goes back in the house. He cut the lights on. The house illuminates again. But what he didn't realize that when he cut the lights, they got a glimpse of him stepping outside the house.
And that was actually the same window where we had concern about the shade. And then there was some other evidence that was recovered from that window sill that indicated a trash bag had been put out that window.
So Detective Fulton sees this information, and then he says, I need to talk to his first wife, Marta Rodriguez.
Marta poses with a blurred child.
Detective Fulton learned that Marta, Jose, and Marta's sister all grew up together in Puerto Rico. And years later, of course, Jose and Marta married and had a son named Hansel. They lived in Arlington, Virginia. From 1988 to 1989, Jose was in the military in Panama. And during this time, he married another woman by the name of Guadalupe.
Jose smiles in a photo.
Jose now brings his other wife to the United States, and they also had a son. Marta finds out about Jose's double life with this new family, and she's no longer dealing with him. She started her own life moving forward. A detective from Arlington Police Department found the old police report, and it indicated that Jose had got into a domestic dispute with Marta. Marta reported that Jose had kidnapped her, raped her, and confined her. Marta was lucky enough to escape.
She, to her credit, was able to finally get the courage and to get him charged in that case. The case was coming to trial, and she never showed up.
Augenstein.
Arlington police obviously were surprised and disappointed that she didn't show up in court, but they were told that she'd moved to Florida and the case was dropped.
A week after the court date, in which Marta did not appear, a phone message was left to Marta's sister, but she heard Marta crying. As last, the sister heard Marta's voice, and Marta was never seen again.
Marta poses in a headband in a photo.
Her family ends up reporting her missing.
Now, 8 years after Pam's disappearance, Detective Fulton has some stunning information to move forward with.
Railings and walkways zag outside the police station.
In 2017, Detective Fulton reached out to Marta's son, Hansel.
Hansel was very reluctant to talk to the police. Skid, as a matter of fact.
Reporter.
Jose and Marta's son, Hansel, described his father as being mercurial, short-tempered.
Hansel told Detective Fulton that he was told by his father, Jose, that his mother had abandoned him. Now, here it is at the time, Hansel was 30 years old, and he was just living off of what his father told him, that his mother had ran off with another guy and just abandoned him.
When Marta went missing, Hansel was very young, but he was scared knowing that his father was dangerous. He had saw all the abusive things that his father had done to his second wife.
At the age of 9, Hansel saw his father, Jose, put a gun to Guadalupe's head, and he said he never said anything because he thought his father would kill him. Fulton also was able to locate Jose's second wife, Guadalupe, and she had mentioned to him how she had left. She had to relocate at least 3 times because she was afraid that Jose was going to find her and kill her.
He had been abusive all his life to women. The ball really starts rolling.
Jose is the last person to see Pam Butler alive. He's supported by the video footage. Marta is abused by Jose, and she's reported missing. And his second wife is a witness to the previous abuse that she received from Jose as well.
Michael Fulton, he's convinced that Marta Rodriguez is not living and that Jose really did do something to Pam.
Signed text, Office of the Attorney General.
Pam Butler's case is assigned to the U.S. Attorney's Office. Top prosecutors Glenn Kirshner and Deborah Sines are assigned to the case. With them, Mike Fulton was able to obtain the arrest warrant based on new information that he got with investigating Marta's case. That, with the evidence in Pam Butler's case, was enough for a judge to issue an arrest warrant for Jose. April the 8th, 2017, Jose was arrested and charged with the murder of Pam Butler.
Jose stares in a mugshot. A man stirs from bed.
I get a phone call. It's about 3 o'clock in the morning. My phone rings. I look at the phone, and it's Detective Fulton calling. I answer the telephone. I say, hello. He says, what would you say if I told you that I locked his motherfucking ass up tonight? And I got real happy. I actually cried. And he asked me, said, how do you feel? I said, man, it's the best feeling I've had in a long time.
The man pumps his fists. Text, 2017, WJLA.
After 8 long years, some relief for the Butler family. D.C. police and Mayor Muriel Bowser announcing 51-year-old Jose Rodriguez Cruz was arrested today and charged with first-degree murder.
So they arrested Jose. Of course, he denied the fact that he did anything, and he kept telling them, I didn't do anything. I'm going to be walking out of here pretty soon, and, you know, you're all going to find out that I didn't do anything.
Derek Butler, Pamela Butler's brother. Text. Jose remains in custody as prosecutors prepare for a trial. Without Pam's body, a conviction will be difficult. Chief Newsham.
It's very difficult to get convictions in cases where you haven't recovered the victim's remains or their body. Extremely difficult to get. And so when prosecutors are making this decision about holding somebody accountable, the sure thing on getting somebody in jail is when they agree to go to jail through a plea bargain.
Deborah Sines, who's the district attorney at the time, calls me. She says, Derek, I'm pretty sure that if we go to court, that I'll hammer his ass. She said, we'll win the case. She said, but there's always a chance that we want. She said, would you agree to a plea bargain? She said, we'll give him 12 years, but he has to tell us where the body is. She said, it's up to you, but I would take it. I thought about it when I called her back. I said, I'll take it.
When Jose Rodriguez was charged in this case, he was initially charged with first degree murder. But when he came to plead guilty to that case, it was reduced to second degree murder.
A street light shines at night. Text. October 6, 2017. Jose Rodriguez Cruz accepts a plea deal. As part of the agreement, he must lead investigators to Pam Butler's body.
During the plea deal, Jose had to describe what happened. He said he went to Pam's home and they got into an argument.
Detective Credle.
Pam stopped berating him. He said he just snapped, punched her, choked her, put her in a plastic bag, and took her out of that window where there is no camera. It's located on the side of the house.
He told them that he buried her along I-95's express lanes in Stafford County, Virginia.
Neil Augenstein, reporter.
Detective Fulton, along with other police personnel, went to Stafford, Virginia, and they went to the meeting area where Jose said he got rid of the body.
A dog wades into grass.
The dogs were able to pick up a scent with indicated there may be a body there.
It's extremely rough. You know, you just keep going through this over and over and over, up and down. Has to come to an end at some point.
Unfortunately, we were unable to recover her.
Investigators clustered together in the grass.
Mike explains to me, he says, we searched, but from the time that Jose put her there to now, they put a HOV lane in. And in some parts of the HOV lane, they put up to 30 feet of dirt. He said, the dogs say that there's a body there or a body had at least been there, but we can't find anything. Having a loved one go missing is already hard enough. Being this close to getting a body and not coming up with it is extremely disappointing. But while they're looking for my sister's body, one of the Virginia police says to them, you know what? At least 20 years ago, we found a body in this exact same place.
Virginia State Police had found remains in 1991, remains that had never been identified.
You're in a location trying to find one body, which is Pam's, and to hear information that another body years ago was found somewhere in this particular area, that's goddamn unbelievable. And detectives were wondering, could that be Marta?
Marta poses.
What Fulton did was he took DNA from Hansel and had it compared to the woman body who was recovered in 1991, and it was a match. That was Marta, his first wife.
That was really the turning point, and it was that link that let police know Jose Rodriguez Cruz had deposited the bodies of two women along I-95.
Jose smiles.
Even though in Pam's case, he got 12 years, Dirk wanted more.
Jose has a chance of getting out of jail, and we have this case where he killed his first wife, Marta Rodriguez. It's a cut and dry case. It's all laid out. They agreed to take it. They're going to take the case. And Virginia don't play. They're going to get him.
Jose stares ahead in a booking photo. Text. If convicted of the 1991 murder of his first wife, Marta Rodriguez, Jose could face the death penalty. Meanwhile, Unique Harris has now been missing for 9 years. Posters and images of Unique blur behind the text.
The Butler family and our family have really supported each other. I was happy to hear about the developments in Pam's case.
Valencia called me and said, I know you're happy. I said, yes, I am. And she said, well, who was it that solved the case? I told her, it's got Michael Fulton. And I said, she go down there and ask him to get on your daughter's case. And she went down there and she requested that he take the case.
Mike Fulton was able to solve the Pamela Butler case in D.C. And I think from that, that gave Valencia's hope that there is a detective that might care and also have the skill level to help them find their loved ones.
I went through 8 detectives in 8 years. We had them 8 no's that didn't get it done. But that one yes, Detective Michael Fulton, was not playing.
Valencia.
What made it very difficult to solve this case was not having any traces of anything to go off of.
Tiffany Smith.
Detective Mike Fulton really reopened the case and he really started doing more digging into everything. It took that going backwards to progress forward.
We had to connect dots and re-interview people to really reach out to every resource he could to help solve this case.
Diane Grooms, Assistant Chief. Text. As investigators reopen Unique Harris' case, Virginia prosecutors are slow to bring Jose Rodriguez Cruz to trial for the murder of his first wife.
We're at the 2-year mark and nothing's happened for killing his first wife. I found out who the Commonwealth's attorney in Virginia is. I called Eric Austin's office and he refuses to take the call. So I had called all the major news stations in Washington and told them I was going down there. And they all followed me down there.
He showed up unannounced at the prosecutor's office in Stafford County. That is not a comfortable situation for an elected official to have the brother of a murder victim show up there with TV cameras following.
He sends his secretary out and she says, you all have to cut the audio and video equipment off and leave the office. Mr. Butler can stay.
Eric Olson did speak with Derek. After the meeting, it became clear that they were both on the same page.
October 18th, 2019, Jose was finally charged with Marta's murder.
The efforts of Mr. Butler to keep reminding the authorities that Marta Rodriguez was not just a cold case, she was a potential homicide victim. It helped us all to realize that we need to do our best to bring justice in this case.
A headline appears.
In 2020, he accepted a plea to second-degree murder.
As part of his plea, Jose faced between 5 and 40 years for the death of Marta. His attorney asked for 5, the minimum. The judge gave him the maximum, 40 years in prison.
Gamini, sister-in-law.
When I heard the sentencing passed down, I was so relieved for Derek. Because I knew that the 12 years that Jose received for the murder of his sister was not enough time. And the fact that he has to serve them consecutively, I think that brought some sense of satisfaction to Derek, and that really made me happy as well.
I still have on my mind that I'm going to write him a letter one day and ask him, how does it feel to be sitting in that jail cell?
Headline. Man gets 40 years for killing ex-wife, Derek Butler.
People today come to me and say, how do you feel now that you have closure? Well, I tell everybody, it's no closure to this case. Somebody took her from us. She didn't die of natural causes. We still never got a body. But it's no closure to her because we don't know what happened to her.
I miss her so much. Sometimes people don't believe me. I just feel she's not gone.
Thelma Butler, Pamela Butler's mother. Text. Shortly after Jose Rodriguez Cruz's sentencing, there is a break in the investigation into Unique Harris' case.
10 years after Unique disappeared, Detective Fulton found some evidence. But it was evidence that was there all along. It should have been found early in the investigation. It was learned that in August of 2010, Isaac Moy was just released from prison after spending 5 years for assaulting a woman.
I personally had never even heard of this person before. Okay, but of course, one of my grandsons pointed out where he lived at and had met him and took us and pointed right to where he lived. And sure enough, there was an Isaac Kente Moye iceberg that my grandson said existed, really existed. And he lived within, he lived in between where I lived and Unique lived.
Chanel Dickerson.
As a condition of Moy's release from prison, he was required to wear a GPS monitor. The tracking from that monitor showed that he was near Unique's apartment during the time of her disappearance.
What the GPS told us was that he arrived there approximately 10:30 on 10/9/10, and he left around 7:20 a.m. of 10/10/10. What you was doing there all that time?
If you innocent, why were you in my sister's house at the same time that she went missing?
Ashley Jordan, Unique Harris's sister.
As Detective Fulton progressed in the case, some disturbing evidence was discovered. His DNA was found on the cushion inside of Unique's apartment. And because Moy had been arrested and incarcerated for 5 years, his DNA was in the system. So it easily should have come back. We just failed to connect those dots. He wasn't fully investigated. When Detective Fulton interviewed Moy, he gave different versions of his relationship with Unique.
He could not say straight if him and my sister had sexual intercourse before. Another thing, he didn't recall his whereabouts the night that she went missing.
Moy stares in a mugshot.
In December of 2020, after connecting all of the dots and interviewing witnesses, the detectives had probable cause to arrest Isaac Moy for the murder of second-degree murder of Unique Harris without her body ever being found.
I'm getting goosebumps telling this part because it's just such a miracle that night. December the 19th, 2020, maybe about 11:30 at night, Detective Fulton called me and he said some of the sweetest words I've ever heard before in my life. He said, "Valencia, we got his ass."
Moy's booking photo fades away. Text. On June 6, 2023, Isaac Moy's trial for the murder of Unique Harris begins.
During the trial, the prosecutors surmised of what they thought that happened to Unique that night.
Text. Prosecutors believe Unique was talking to her boyfriend, Paris Craig, while Isaac was in the house with her. A woman speaks on the phone while a man sits on a living room sofa.
If you got eyes on somebody, who sits and just listen to somebody talk? Lovey-dovey talk to somebody else. Why? So, after she hung up the phone with her boyfriend, he took it to a deadly level.
The man stands up.
He was supposed to be doing a 15-year bit that he had got out in 5. That's why he was on a ankle monitor. That's probably exactly why Unique didn't give him the time of day. And he was looking for a whole lot more. Just stewing in the fact that she didn't want him.
A hand takes a fistful of stuffing from a couch cushion. Prosecutors argue that Isaac tried to have sex with Unique. When she refused, he raped and killed her in retaliation.
The main piece of the evidence that the prosecutor presented against him was the couch cushion with the hole in it. His semen was found in several spots on the couch cushion around that hole. He did not testify for himself. He didn't have nothing to say on his own behalf.
Loved ones hug.
In June of 2023, Isaac Moy is convicted for the second-degree murder of Unique Harris.
Now, in the preliminary hearings and stuff like that that we were going through, you know, he would have this, like, smirk on his face. But when that verdict came, he wouldn't even look at me. That smirk was already gone off his face.
The wheels of justice may turn slow, which is one brutal lesson I've had to learn. But justice delayed is not justice denied.
My baby's smiling right now. That big old smile that she had, she's smiling right now.
I wish I could have been in the courtroom when that verdict was read. I'm shocked I didn't hear Valencia's shout outs from where I was. What a moment for her.
Diane Grooms, Assistant Chief, Metropolitan PD, retired.
The sentencing was definitely a portion of resolution. He was sentenced to 35 of 40 years. Considering the fact that he is 46 years old, that's an effective life sentence for him.
He's where he needs to be. I try to practice forgiveness, but I have no forgiveness for him. I try to practice understanding, but I see no understanding in this.
Melissa Mathis, godmother.
Everything that I was taught when it comes to turning the left cheek or the right cheek or whatever, it ain't no damn cheek to turn.
Unique smiles in a picture.
I just asked God, like, why was it my sister instead of me? She did not deserve this. It's going to always feel like I let my sister down, you know, because I wasn't there. And I know in that moment, she wished that I was, and I wasn't. So, you know, that's something I'll never get back. So, you know,
it'll really never heal.
Ashley wipes her eyes.
I'm never going to heal. No, I'm sorry.
Unique grins with her boys.
Despite many tips over the years, unfortunately, Unique's body has never been located.
There is no full resolution. And daggone sure ain't no whatever closure is until I find my child. It's just sick when you think about it. And all that time I was searching for my daughter, he knew exactly where she was. He still knows. But he won't tell me.
We know you did it. You know, you were there all night. Just tell us where my sister is so we can give her the proper burial. It's just demonic. You're a demonic person.
I told him in my victim impact statement, you don't want to tell me where my daughter is? Fine. Because the same way God led me to you, he gonna lead me to her too.
They provided a location, a wooded location, during the trial.
After he left Unique's apartment, he went in that same wooded area that I've been in multiple times. Every time I go out there, it's just this feeling, and I can't help but just let her know. I know you're in here somewhere, and Mama ain't gonna stop until she finds you.
I'm always like kicking, you know, and looking for, see if I see any markers, you know, because sometimes sick people like that, they leave markers.
Yeah.
Text. Police have been unable to locate Unique Harris's remains. Valencia stands with Derek in the woods.
You don't have a body, and I don't have a body. One of us gonna come out with a body.
Both of us. Okay. We ain't never gonna give up hope.
Okay.
Not even on Pam.
Yeah, all right.
Chanel Dickerson, Assistant Chief of Police, Metropolitan PD, retired.
I welcome all the attention and the advocacy around missing women of color, but it's based on a system's negligence, right? That's why we're talking about it. Pamela Butler and Unique Harris vanished and was never seen and heard from again. And it took years before their cases were taken seriously.
Diane Grunes.
I don't think people realize how many people of color are missing in the past decade. If people really knew how huge this issue is, there'd be way more attention and resources put to it.
When I think about the intersectionality between race and gender, a Black woman do not stand a chance, because what society has portrayed as a woman and victimhood is a white woman in a middle class standard. Black women, we don't fit in that. And so that is portrayed to society that our life is not worthy and it deserves less media coverage.
The reality of these days is that news coverage can help solve a case. Very often, the stories that news organizations find compelling are when the victims are white and good-looking.
Natalie Holloway and Gabby Petito, they made national news. Everyone knew about it. But Pamela Butler and Unique Harris, the families were fighting for the media coverage. They were doing it on their own.
Unique smiles.
I feel like my sister did not get the proper attention that she deserved because she was a Black girl. This is not something that just started. Our ancestors, you know, have been fighting this fight for a long time, so we all know what it roots from, you know. Being an African American, you're born having to fight for your rights.
How are you going to have equality or democracy when you don't even have humanity?
Valencia Harris.
There should be more of an outcry of what's happening with Black and brown people who are reported missing.
Poster scroll.
It should be a system, fair and unbiased policing, policies, laws that require police departments to investigate cases the same. But we have to put things in place to make sure that no one else experienced what Unique Harris and Pamela Butler's family felt.
A grid of missing posters shows 18 different women. Detective Mitch Kredel.
It's almost like, how can we fix the system? And I did for 29 years, and it never changed. I know I gave them 1,000%, but overall the system gave them zero. And that's the truth.
I entered into policing because I wanted to serve and protect all, but I was trying to figure out, like, I'm a part of this system, so why is this happening? Like, if I can't correct this, then who can correct it? But that's where, like, systemic racism and issues come in that's embedded in the culture. And if you do not disrupt that, it will continue on to the next generation.
Peter Newsham, Chief of Police.
In both of these cases, you know, Derek did it for his sister, and then Valencia did it for her daughter. And in both of these cases, there were successful results because somebody was held accountable for it.
They not only were working their loved ones' cases, they started being the advocate for other missing people because they knew what they had gone through.
I tell people a lot of times when I'm doing this whole thing, the advocacy and the activism has been like therapy for me.
It helps me to know that I'm helping other people. It gives me fuel to just keep going on. And I want people to know that if something happens, we don't have to just sit back and accept it. Keep on fighting to the end.
Derek Butler, Pamela Butler's brother. Photos of Pam cover a wall.
I want people to know that my sister loved her family, that she was caring, she wanted to make a difference in this world. And I really think she did, because I believe that, well, I know that by her murder and disappearance, that she saved many lives.
Unique would give the shirt off her back to anybody, whether she knew you or not.
Tiffany Smith, Unique Harris's cousin.
Not missed. Not being able to call her. Not being able to talk about the things that we have upcoming. I can't call her and talk about the growth that our kids have made, the strides, the things that they want to do as adults, the things that they want to develop in their careers. I can't do those things, and I want to.
Unique's boys are soon to graduate and graduating. She's missing that.
Melissa Mathis, Unique's godmother.
She's missing out on the middle school, the high school, the prom, you know, getting ready for college. Just the different things that was taken away from her, as well as the kids. Their mother not being there.
I have this perfume that she used very little of it before she was taken. And whenever I feel like it, and whenever she's just, you know, I guess all over my spirit, I'll just smell it and inhale it. And sometimes I'll even put it on. So that whole day, I'm constantly reminded that my job as her mother is not done.
We would probably lose our minds if we just sat, okay. You know, and know we're not those type of people. It's like, you know, let's get out and get down in the trenches. We ain't scared to get down in the trenches.
Not at all.
You know, even if buck deers run us out.
Text. Foundations like Black and Missing continue to shed light on the racial disparities in missing persons cases. Many states are considering Ebony Alert legislation to require law enforcement to treat missing persons of color the same as missing whites. If you have information about any missing person, please contact one of these organizations. National Unidentified and Missing Persons System, namus.nij.ojp.gov. National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, missingkids.org. Black and Missing Foundation, blackandmissinginc.com. Credits: Executive Producer Robert Twilley, Executive Producer Todd Moss, Co-Executive Producers Victoria Drew Dooley, Alyssa Maddox. Credits continue to roll. Production logos: Fox Alternative Entertainment, Streetcar Entertainment.